Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
For now, all the leaders present in these sessions have condemned and agreed to work together to avert such kind of incident, which is really affecting the image of Africa in the world stage.
The African Union's Heads of State Summit ends in Ethiopia Sunday.
We have the chance to win two trophies in this calendar of February, and we are looking up to it. And as normally, it will not be easy. It will not be easy task. But if you want to be number one, yes, you have to beat the best.
Chelsea soccer star Antonio Rudiger launches the Antonio Rudiger Foundation in Sierra Leone.
This was a quick response to a huge problem. And there are other plans afoot. So, you know, we'll be looking at additional trains in January, February next year. And he's looking to meet his commitment of 500,000 passengers a day on that line.
And in Nigeria, the Lagos State governor purchases two high-speed trains from the U.S. to start a metro system. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The African Union's Heads of State Summit in Ethiopia's capital Addis Ababa ends Sunday. The theme of this year's conference centers on strengthening food security and nutrition, including systems for increased food production, health, and social welfare. Also high on the agenda are efforts to limit the spread of the coronavirus and peace and security, including combating militant groups on the continent. The leaders are confronted with the recent overthrow of government in Sudan, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Guinea, as well as the recent attempt to overthrow the administration in Guinea-Bissau. The African Union has since imposed sanctions and suspended the membership of Sudan, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Guinea. The continental body has a zero-tolerance policy on the forceful overthrow of a legitimately elected government. For the latest development about the conclusion of the summit, I reach Gelmo Dawit at the African Union headquarters in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
So to tell you what has happened today, all of the sessions which are held today are closed sessions, and it's about reports in general, yes.
I understand there were briefings on the CDC and how the African Union plans to fight the COVID-19 pandemic and other strategies to fight other pandemics that might occur or happen on the continent. Talk to me about this.
So there is a report that has been unveiled today on the progress of CDC Africa by Dr. John Ingengeson, who is the director of CDC Africa at the moment. Briefing the media today, he says Africa CDC is on the final stage of to be fully an entity with the detailed authority to deal with pandemic in Africa. As we spoke yesterday, so far Africa has no entities that will deal with the vaccination production and other issues which is concerned with the pandemic. So he says the formulation of the CDC Africa is on final stage, and by soon it will be operationally said. So he also spoke about the role CDC Africa played in facilitating the meeting of the Substitute Extraordinary Summit of African Union. He said the CDC Africa has managed to help African Union conduct a COVID-19 free session so far. Yeah.
Gamu, what about the political affairs? What was the briefing on political affairs about?
So there is quite little detail about the political things, but Ambassador Bankole Adoye, Commissioner for Political Affairs, Peace and Security, has talked to media about what has been happening so far in the podium among the leaders of African nations. He raised about the measures African Union has taken regarding the coup in the Western Africa. He says the African Union has suspended four countries from the Union because of their involvement with the coup. He also spoke about the African Union involvement in Ethiopian political and security problems. He says from the beginning, African Union was involved in this fight, which is happening right now still. And the former Nigerian president, Olusegun Obasanjo, is helping to end this matter amicably. And he's also being involved with the Ethiopian National Dialogue, which is set to happen very soon. This is what has been said regarding political things.
Talking about the security situation, there are militant groups, jihadist groups in the Sahel and other parts of Africa. What specifically are the issues that they addressed with militant groups or rebels?
So, speaking about the security problem, he says he mainly spoke about the coups. He says all the African leaders present in these sessions have agreed to condemn all the coups that are happening and affecting the life of African citizens. Regarding the militants and the terrorist activities in Africa, he spoke about the establishment of some task force which was forwarded by Egypt last February. So that thing is still under progress. It will be a major topic of the African Union, which is going to be held very soon in Angola, I think. That's what he spoke.
Before you go, Guillermo, did they talk about any other ways to prevent these coups from happening? Because there are four coups at the moment, and then people are suggesting that Africa might experience more due to socioeconomic problems that are facing respective countries on the continent or members of the African Union.
So speaking of that, you know, yesterday when we were speaking, the chairperson of African Union, Moussa Faki Mahamat, has spoke about the real cause of these coups. He was saying that there was still a challenge about the communication between the regional bloc and African Union. So Ambassador Bankole Adeoye was also enforcing that. He was speaking about the African Union engagement with the regional bloc after this to end this matter, because it is now becoming a trend to see a coup, and some countries are even getting away with it. So he says, for now, all the leaders present in these sessions have condemned it and agreed to work together to avert such kind of incident, which is really affecting the image of Africa in the world stage.
That was VOA's reporter, Guillermo Dawit. He spoke with me from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Sierra Leone's President Julius Maada Bio has appointed English Premier League soccer star Antonio Rudiger as Brand Global Sierra Leone Football Ambassador. The president also presented Rudiger with a diplomatic passport at a ceremony at the State House in the capital, Freetown. Antonio Rudiger, a tough-tackling central defender, is regarded as one of the best and toughest-tackling central defenders in the world. He's a Sierra Leonean German who plays for the Chelsea Football Club in England and for the German national team. Meanwhile, Rudiger has also launched the Antonio Rudiger Foundation in Sierra Leone, which he says has four goals for sports. They include infrastructure, education, inclusivity, and literacy. I reached Antonio Rudiger in London via Skype. In part two of the interview, I began by asking Rudiger about the team that will implement the four priorities of the foundation.
Yes, I have a team. I have a team of, we are quite a big team. I think it was, don't get me wrong, it's 6 to 7 people who are really into this. And we are talking, we are on a daily basis on contacts and to find ideas and where we go next.
So will you have a chance of taking some of your colleague soccer players in Chelsea there to go help with, you know, the work that your foundation is doing?
For sure. Like I'm very sure, because at the end of the day, like, I have good friends in football who are eager to help. I already did a thing without even the foundation, like with Mesut Özil was involved, N'Golo Kanté was involved. So I think I hope they join, definitely.
The president was talking about the mask campaign, you know, to protect the people against the COVID and, you know, restrict the spreading of the disease and all that. What motivated you to get into it before even your foundation was launched?
Yeah, it's just this. It's just in general, because it was like in Europe, COVID hit very hard, and you just hear people are dying and stuff like this. And then, yeah, you think back. My parents are there, and not only my parents, just the whole population. I just thought, because I'm not a doctor, I'm not. This is not my area, but you just hear people are dying. So I was afraid that something like Ebola is, coming again and stuff like this. And so I said, like, if there's any chance I can help, yeah, that was my motivation.
So where do you see your foundation in Sierra Leone within the next 5 years?
Ooh, at the end of the day, like, you never know what happens, because at the end of the day, like, I would, like, my personal goal, what we want to achieve is definitely to improve in lots of aspects. Education is more like, it takes a long time, to be honest. That's not from today to tomorrow. But what I want to really achieve very early is the structure, like in the infrastructure. There I want to go, because that's obviously that's what people see, because we all know you're African too. So, you know, the African man believes in what he sees.
That's right. That's right. So when you interacted with the children in Sierra Leone, you even went to watch a soccer match where some of the disabled were playing. What was your message to them? Because as you said, you could see the love, you could see the passion. What was your message to them?
Well, my message to them is that, you know, at the end of the day, they think maybe nobody sees them, but that's what I wanted to confirm to them. There's actually people who care about them. This was my message.
So with you becoming the sports ambassador, global sports ambassador for Sierra Leone, what will you want to achieve with this new role?
With this new role, to achieve, like, to show a different type of country. Because to be honest, we mostly been in the dark light. And this is what I want to, I don't want that anymore. I just don't want that, because yes, like, yeah, we've been through civil war, we had Ebola, but we survived. We are still there. So I don't want people to look up on us. No, I want people to see us as equal. That's what I want.
That's good. Before you go, Antonio, what will be your message to the people of Sierra Leone? What should be their expectations for your foundation going forward?
Yeah, first of all, like, at the end of the day, what I want to tell all the people is, as I said before, it's not a one-man show. Definitely not. And that's why I did the foundation in Sierra Leone, to connect with the people. And we have to put ourselves in a role. We have to be role models, not only myself. And that's why I launched it there, so to have people on board so we can grow together. And first of all, but the most important thing is, like, I want to put my country in the limelight. I want to put my country up there. And but what people should know, this doesn't happen through day and night. It's a long process, and I believe in the process, and I am 100% like ready to go that way. And I know my role I play in.
Before I go, I can't help it, but I understand you just came back from training. How was training? How is the team? And what are your expectations with some of the league matches coming up and the Champions League and all that? Briefly talk to me about it.
Yeah, like today was an easy session. Was good. It was great to see the boys again. And the expectations. Yeah, we have we have the chance to win two trophies in this calendar of February, and we are looking up to it. And as normal, it will not be easy. It will not be easy task. But if you want to be number one, yes, you have to beat the best.
Antonio Rudiger is English Premier League soccer star who plays for Chelsea Football Club. He spoke with me from the British capital, London. In Nigeria, the governor of the commercial capital, Lagos, has purchased two high-speed trains to start a metro system. Babajide Sanwo-Olu, who was in Milwaukee to purchase the trains, had promised the people of Lagos to have a mass transit system to ease traffic and congestion. Officials say the purchase of the locomotives forms part of the governor's Red Line Metro project. In his words, Governor Sanwo-Olu says 37 kilometers of the line will include 8 stations and move passengers from Agbado to Oyinbo. Upon completion, the system is expected to transport over 500,000 people daily in Lagos. Marcus Mukoro is the chief executive officer at Reliance Rail International. His company will be working on the Lagos Metro Transit System. I began by asking him about the history of the trains and how the system will benefit Lagos when it's completed this year.
The Targo Series 8 trains, which was a set of trains that were manufactured by a company called Targo, a Spanish company based in the U.S., were designed for a route between Chicago and Milwaukee for for the authorities in Milwaukee. This was done under a Democratic governor at the time. The governor's obviously changed hands to Republicans, and the Republicans, you know, fought against procuring those strains. That led to a lawsuit between the state and Talgo. Talgo won after several years, and were awarded a $50 million settlement for three trains. And then, you know, the trains became available for sale. So we swooped in and were able to get these trains at a reasonable rate for the state.
So how did you get Babajide Sanwo-Olu, the governor of Lagos, to buy these trains?
So it was actually the MD of Lamata Lagos Area Metropolitan Transit Authority, who had worked with us in the past, that approached us and said, look, the governor's determined to deliver on his promise to have trains running by quarter four 2022. The initial thought process was to go straight to electrification, but we made it clear to them that there's no way we could provide EMUs, electrical multiple unit trains, and electrify the line by the end of this year. It just wasn't practical. And apart from the time frame, the cost would have been exorbitant. But the governor was really determined to get things up and running. So we said, look, the best way to go would be to seek some diesel multiple units that would carry passengers in the interim until, you know, we were ready to go to electrification. So that's kind of how we...
Right. So talk to me about when the trains get there. Will there be a technology transfer, installation? Talk to me about that process. How are you going to handle it?
Interesting one. Thanks for that question. Reliance Rail is working with Talgo. The thought process is to move the trains into Lagos and have Lagosians work with Reliance Rail and Talgo to retrofit the trains, to reconfigure them, retrofit them to accommodate more passengers, which will create jobs in Lagos and make the trains look more like a metro train than a regional train, which is what they were designed for initially.
How beneficial will this be for the people of Lagos, or Lagosians as they call them?
Well, one of the biggest problems that anybody will agree on in Lagos is traffic.
Right.
The situation with traffic. The red line happens to be, from projections, the busiest corridor of all the six corridors that are being looked at right now. And so the Governor Sanwo-Olu really wanted desperately to try and serve that community, ensure that they can reduce the amount of traffic and just create ease of flow of people from the Agbado axis into Oyinbo and subsequently Marina.
You know, one of the challenges that a lot of Africans face has to do with maintenance.
Yes.
Now, is there an agreement about maintaining these trains to ensure that they last for the duration for which these trains were manufactured?
It's interesting that you raise this. Reliance Rail International happens to be a Texas-based company. We're working with Talgo. We will be handling that's the thought process anyway. We'll be handling the maintenance for the first five years on these trains. And some, you know, we should be able to handle that quite conveniently with Nigerians, training Nigerians to be able to take over the maintenance going forward.
What should be the expectations of Nigerians? Because this will not only benefit the people of Lagos or Lagosians, but anybody who visits the state.
Well, this is the first of several steps that the Governor Sanwo-Olu intends to deliver on. This was a quick response to a huge problem. And there are other plans afoot. So, you know, we'll be looking at the additional trains in January, February next year. And he's looking to meet his commitment of 500,000 passengers a day on that line.
Marcus Mukoro is the chief executive officer at Reliance Rail International. He spoke with me from Houston, Texas. In Malawi, the ruling Malawi Congress Party, or MCP, is rejecting critics' allegations that it made outlandish promises in the last general election. The party, which allied itself with the United Transformation Movement, called the Tonse Alliance for the last general election, promised to improve the living standards and curb corruption in public institutions. But after a year in power, the alliance is coming under criticism for failing to enact that agenda guaranteed by its candidates, including current President Lazarus Chakwera. He reconstituted his cabinet after dissolving the old team of advisers following pressure and complaints from several groups. Among them are civil society and religious organizations who accuse some of the old team of corruption and of not being effective. Meanwhile, the local media reports growing divisions among the parties of the alliance. The report cited differences between the spokespersons of the MCP and the UTM. Maurice Munthale is the spokesperson for the Malawi Congress Party, or MCP. He tells me that the Tonse Alliance will keep all of its promises made in the run-up to the last general election.
Whatever we said through our leaders in our campaign messages were our dreams. That is what we thought and we still feel Malawi should have and Malawi should be. But as Dr. Chakwera said at some point, when the captain of the ship is sailing through rough waters and then there is a big whale or a big rock in front, you cannot always go according to your planned route before you started off the ship. We want to divert a bit so as to avoid the rock, and then the journey goes on. By that I mean, we might have said some things without actually knowing what was inside the government, because you remember there have been regimes in Malawi, and what those regimes have been doing, we never knew. We might have assumed that all was well in government. But all the same, I cannot say that we overpromised, because I feel everything we said can be done and will be done.
Are you therefore telling the people of Malawi that all the promises made during the election will be kept by the president and the Tonse Alliance?
Exactly. All we are saying is it is a matter of when what we said is going to take place and it be implemented. So some things will be implemented quickly and in the short term, some things in the medium term, and others in the long term. But it's not only what we promised that will be fulfilled, everything that we said. It is also what we are planning now. So what we promised, what we are planning now, what we will be planning, that will be implemented.
But Morris, what people are saying is that the government is facing difficulty in providing or improving service delivery. And the promises were such that Malawians expected their living standard to improve significantly upon the election of the president and the Tonse Alliance. And they are saying that service delivery is poor, and that is basically one of the major reasons why the president dissolved the cabinet and reformed the cabinet. But maintaining 20 or so ministers, they said, will ensure that he might unlikely meet that promise of delivering on his promises. How do you react to that?
No, I think everybody knows that it is not only Malawi that was hit by the pandemic COVID. When we were campaigning, we were campaigning outside the COVID pandemic. But as everybody knows, we were hit globally and nationally by the COVID pandemic. That disturbed everything else. And our economy and that of other countries was brought to its knees. And we must agree here that to a large extent, what we promised has met some challenges because of that. But also, we all know in this country, and you also know, that the regime that we ousted was too corrupt. And we have all the evidence of how they embezzled the money, how they stole the money. And that also is a tall order in the new government, because we have to clean the mess. In fact, not only following up on our money and having to bring to book all those that stole our money, but also that regime was a system, a bad system for that matter. And we have people around who are actually frustrating efforts to get Malawi moving forward. So that is a big issue in itself. Having said that, let me say also that the weather patterns, the climate change issues are also standing in our way. Because as I speak, we had Cyclone Anna that has hit this country so badly, and people have lost lives, and crops and gardens swept. So all these factors, plus the fact that we are so burdened with debt nationally and internationally, yes, we are finding problems, but those problems will never frustrate us as we think of taking Malawi further.
Maurice Munthale is the spokesperson for the Malawi Congress Party, or MCP. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music from African Collection. But first, increasing violence and insecurity in Burkina Faso are spurring refugees to flee into neighboring countries, adding to political and humanitarian crisis in the Sahel region. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says some 19,200 Burkinabe fled last year to neighboring Ivory Coast, Mali, Niger, and Benin. This was a 50% increase from the previous year. The agency says the number of Burkinabe living in exile across the region has nearly doubled to more than 34,000. Among them are 7,000 refugees who have arrived in northwestern Ivory Coast, or Côte d'Ivoire, since May. UNHCR spokesman Boris Cheshakov says vicious attacks by armed groups, mainly in the region bordering Ivory Coast, are driving more people to flee across the border.
The influx has accelerated in the past 6 weeks, though it is not linked to the recent military coup in the country, with an average of 100 people recently crossing the border daily, according to local authorities. We have registered and have been providing assistance to over 4,000 of them already.
The increasing refugee movement is putting enormous strain on the fragile Sahel region. The Central Sahel, which includes Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, is plagued by political instability, widespread violence, food shortages, and a climate crisis. Cheshakov says this region of 20 million people cannot manage and support rapidly growing populations. He warns intercommunal conflicts over scarce resources are worsening.
The plight of Burkinabe refugees is becoming increasingly precarious as more people arrive in Côte d'Ivoire without personal belongings or food. They told UNHCR staff that civilians had been killed and their homes burned down by extremists. They're being hosted by Ivorian villagers in crowded conditions.
On top of the burgeoning refugee crisis, the UNHCR reports Burkina Faso also is facing a crisis of internal displacement. It says increasing violence by armed groups has forced more than 1.5 million people to flee their homes. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. This is the Nightline Africa Sports. At the Africa Cup of Nations in Cameroon, it's the final game on Sunday. Record seven-time champions Egypt face Senegal. Host Cameroon came from 3-0 down to level 3-3 against Burkina Faso before winning a penalty shootout to finish third. Burkina Faso had been in control after 49 minutes, but five-time winners Cameroon responded in superb fashion, cheered on by the home crowd before converting all five of their spot kicks to win 5-3. Cameroon had been beaten on penalties in their semi-final against Egypt on Thursday night. And at the Club World Cup in Abu Dhabi, Egyptian giants Al Ahly beat Monterrey of Mexico 1-0 to set up a FIFA Club World Cup semi-final against Palmeiras of Brazil. Al Ahly playing without several Egyptian players who are on duty at the Africa Cup of Nations will take on Brazilian club Palmeiras on Tuesday. Later Sunday, Saudi Arabia's Al Hilal will face hosts Al Jazeera, and the winner will play England's Chelsea Football Club on Wednesday. Chelsea will be without their manager, who tested positive for coronavirus. The final is scheduled for February 12th. The Club World Cup features the winners of the Continental Cups in FIFA's six confederations and the league champions for the United Arab Emirates. The tournament was due to be played in Japan in December, but was postponed and moved to the United Arab Emirates. The Court of Arbitration for Sports on Saturday overturned the one-year ban handed out by FIFA to former Confederation of African Football CAF president Issa Hayatou. FIFA had ruled that the Cameroonian had breached its code of ethics when signing African football's largest ever deal with French media company Lagardère's in 2016. The contract was worth $1 billion. But the Court of Arbitration for Sports panel found there was insufficient evidence to establish a violation of the FIFA code of ethics, which could justify the sanctions imposed on Issa Hayatou by FIFA. Elsewhere, Ivory Coast and South Africa will play World Cup holder France in friendlies in March. France hosts Ivory Coast on March 25th in Marseille and South Africa 4 days later in Lille. Both African teams have missed out on a spot at the 2022 World Cup in Qatar, and South Africa also failed to qualify for the Africa Cup of Nations. Ivory Coast were beaten on penalties in the last 16 at the Africa Cup of Nations by Egypt, who play in the final in Cameroon on Sunday. The two games will be France's first matches against African opposition since a goalless draw with the Ivorians in November of 2016. Ivory Coast will also play another friendly against England at Wembley Stadium on March 27th. And that's about it for this edition of Netland Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Netland Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. As we are witnessing a revival of debates and comments about confrontation between the Western countries and a budding coalition against China and Russia, there is a feeling that the Cold War might be reappearing. In this context, it is opportune to see how such a growing confrontation could be reflected on the African continent. It is true to say that 2022 may be remembered as the first sign that showed a more muscular China-African relationship, particularly in East Africa, where Chinese huge infrastructural projects are designable. In the very beginning of January, China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi paid three visits to African countries in Eritrea, in Kenya, and in Comoros. In his visit to Asmara, the Chinese Foreign Minister stressed China's determination to improve its relations with African countries. In Kenya, the Chinese foreign minister tried to push away what he considers Western criticism of China's assistance to African countries. He noted that those who are critical of China's relationship with Africa, particularly in terms of its infrastructural development, may not want African countries to develop. The president of Kenya, Kenyatta, was adamant that the African people know what they want, and they value African economic relations with the continent. He pushed aside fears of a debt trap in Africa, and he believed that these infrastructural developments will make not only Kenya far more developed, but also in the East African side of the continent. Interestingly, at this very same time, many East African economists are beginning to look at concerns earlier expressed by Africans about loans from the IMF, particularly its conditionalities. In this context, the Speaker of the Parliament in Tanzania openly criticized loans being incurred by the President of Tanzania of IMF. He said that these loans are too huge and they may turn out to be a burden on the people of Tanzania. He was later forced to resign because it was felt that he was making criticism against the president. In other areas of East Africa, economists are beginning to show that conditionalities by the IMF are far more detrimental than what they say is the so-called debt trap. They have also pointed out that commercial loans are far more burdensome than loans from China. In the Comoros, Chinese foreign minister talked about strengthening ties with the country and also saying that we are going to help with vaccines to a large extent in the Comoros. But it was left to the foreign minister of Uganda to stress what the African continent expects from the Western countries. He welcomed the commitment by the European Union and President Biden that soon they would be launching their plans for infrastructural development in Africa. But the foreign minister also said that while Africa is prepared to maintain cordial relations with the West, Western countries and their officials should begin to learn to respect African norms, tradition, and ideas. In this sense, he said, the European Union and all the Western countries must respect the Weltanschauung of African countries and also to know how and why Africa ticks. In the same breath, of course, Western countries have been looking at their own concerns, particularly as they see it, the proliferation of Russian private economic companies like Wagner Group, which they believe will do harm to African development. So this is the stage where we are, and it will be interesting to see what will develop in the coming months, particularly as we see whether major efforts will be made to calm international tensions everywhere. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
You want to bamba, you want to cheat with the big boys. Now you the rock, get the kitty, you the rock, get a cup, we drink with a drop cup. Ha. Hey, can you see how it goes? How it goes? Oh, you're telling me who bends you? And who, and who? Ha. All right, take it easy, and it's place behind. Wait. Okay.
Son of his love, no be kind to you. Go school, go school, go the fam tools. And all the parameters that you want to form through. See, even your papa not to save you. For all the cannabis and when they pick it down through. Man, all the niggas don't find you. Because that nigga will you feel more, he don't poop. Oh boy, he don't poop. Ha, hey, come on, let's go. Shabby make a Samoa. Say my kid not go join God. Ha, you want to bamba? You want to cheat with the big boys? Now you the wrong, get the kitty, you the wrong. Get the cat out of which link with a drop cup. Ha, hey, Jeffy, you see how it sing goes. After telling me who blamed you. And who?
Go take life too fast. Africa nights in a cool rush. And I remember you refused to kiss me, and now you're using my toothbrush. You say you think I talk too much, that I'm not your type, and you don't like the hype, cause your daddy is a preacher. Now you're wearing my t-shirt, and I don't want this night to end before you know I love you. I don't want this night to end before you know I need you. Na muda usini hisi ye ni kwambie I love you. I don't want this night to end before you know I need you. So I'ma keep it short and sweet. DJ play the song on repeat. Odie odie dance to the beat. Apo lipo kamatana feel so sweet. Apo lipo kamatana feel so sweet. Short and sweet. DJ play the song on the beat. Odi odi dance to the beat. Apolipo kamatana feel so sweet. Apolipo kamatana feel so sweet.
Yeah. You wanna do the right thing, you find this too exciting. Your friends tell you kudetun to come in, mini high risk, throw that shit behind me. Yeah. Come sit beside me, if you got too much class, then do me like assignments. Yeah. Please don't remind me of the bad times, your sugar sweet, your icy. But in my eye, it shouldn't be so hard to make up your mind. Just do it one time for the one time. Itakofeo kiparticipate. Vile nimejitolea ungejonge appreciate. Lighting intimate. 1+68. Usirasha tokitoka sai you'll still be late. Tusiate chance ya kufeel regret. How much higher than this can you ever get? Any Mount Everest. And by sunrise I'm gone. I'm not here that long. Keep it short,
short and sweet. DJ play the song on repeat. Odi odi dance to the beat. Apoli poka matana feel so sweet. Apoli poka matana feel so sweet. Short and sweet. DJ play the song on repeat. Odi odi dance to the beat. Apoli poka matana feel so sweet.
Na na na.
Apoli poka matana feel so sweet.
Ah, it grip me bad sita. Na sina kiti soda kalia kitanda. Ikitanda na ni 4x6. Usingizi wapono kako 6 feet deep. Kabla nizame 6 inch deep. Acha niseti mood na maudi. Nangoma za kabaka daudi. Nangoma za oliva mtukui.
Getting closer, let's get warmer. Lose the tension, be together. I know how to treat you better. Make this moment unforgettable. With this feelings undeniable. Moyo shajipa kwani. Na nasi mikukubali. Nimekimbiza nyuki nile asali. Oh Lord, I'ma keep it short and sweet. DJ play this song on repeat. Odi odi dance to the beat. Apolipo kamatana feel so sweet. Apolipo kamatana feel so sweet. Short and sweet. DJ play this song on repeat. Odi odi dance to the beat. Apolipo kamatana feel so sweet. Apolipo kamatana feel so sweet.
Wanna do the right thing, you find it too exciting. Your friends tell you kudetun to come in, mini high risk, throw that shit behind me. Come sit beside me, if you got too much class, then do me like assignment.
Thank you.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor William Eagle, reporter Douglas Impuga, and producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, if all seeds that fall were to grow, then no one could follow the path under the trees. I'm your host, Peter Clotet in Washington. Good evening, Africa.